The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, there are very few guests that I am more excited about having on than the gentleman who I'm about to bring on. You heard me talk about him a lot last year because he was the only economist that we spoke to last year that actually predicted that interest rates were going to go down instead of up. Everybody that we brought on in January or February last year, to an individual, indicated that they thought that interest rates would move higher last year. And the sole exception to that was Dr. Lacey Hunt. Dr. Hunt is Executive Vice President of Hoisington Asset Management. He's internationally known economist, author of two books and numerous articles. He was, for 14 years, he was U.S. economist for the HSBC Group, one of the world's largest bank. He was Executive Vice President and Chief Economist at Fidelity Bank. He served as Vice President of Monetary Economics at Chase Econometrics. And as I said, he was the true predictor of interest rates last year. Good morning, sir.
Nice to be with you. Very kind of you to recall.
Oh, no. Listen, I talked about you every now and then when I would get somebody on. You stood out as the sole individual last year who, it was in January when we were fortunate enough to have you on, and you said interest rates were going to go down. Nobody believed me. Nobody believed you, I don't think. I don't think anybody believed either one of us that day. But I believed what you said and set my portfolios up accordingly. And lo and behold, you were correct. And they've gone down again this year. What's your prediction for this year?
Well, I think that it will be a very bumpy ride as it was last year. But I think that we have not seen the secular low in interest rates. I think it's ahead of us, and I think the trend is downward for 2015 and probably for several more years after that. And once we do hit the secular low, I think the real risk is that we may have a very extended period of low rates. They'll be volatile, but they'll remain low. I don't expect to have a V-shaped bottom, but a drooping L bottom.
So now, we're on the 10-year, we're at about 2.1 this morning. Last year, I think when you and I spoke about this time, it was about 2.5, 2.6, 2.7, somewhere right in there, mid-2s. Are we going to go below, do you think? I think the low was June of 2012, if I remember correctly, 1.47 or something. Will we see something below that? Will we approach Germany? I believe Germany's 10-year bond right now is a 0.36 or something. Are we talking about something that low?
Well, I think that, let's look at the historical record. Since the 1870s, and we have very good data, the long bond, not the 10-year, has averaged about 4. The inflation rate has averaged about 2, which meant that investors received 2% after inflation. There have been instances in the U.S. economy in the late 1800s, early 1900s, again in the late 1930s, early 1940s, before we entered World War II, in which essentially all of the inflation was wrung out of the American economy, and you either had zero inflation or you had slight deflation. In those instances, the long bond, the nominal bond, went to 2%. You get a 2% real return. You have zero inflation. So it really depends on where the inflation rate is going, but I think that the likelihood is that we're going to see a period of an extended period. It'll take a while to get there. It won't happen tomorrow, but we will get to the point where there is no inflation, maybe slight deflation, and then the bonds will go to 2, and then they may go on through 2, and I'm afraid they'll remain there, reflecting the fact that the U.S. economy and the global economy is just too indebted, and this indebtedness is a severe restraint on growth and inflation.
In fact, you started off your fourth quarter quarterly review and outlook. You started off with the word deflation. That's something that several folks have brought up in interviews, the D word. And I understand that France is fully in deflation. That is something people are really concerned about. And I had someone on the show a couple of weeks ago who said that they thought that the Fed was going to raise rates not because they had needed to, but because they had to get it up there just in case deflation came across from the pond and we needed to drop it rates to offset deflation. Are you concerned that we could get into a deflationary environment here? A real live one here in the United States?
I think that we can go into modest deflation. I mean, Europe already is. In the last 12 months, the consumer price index has fallen 0.8%. We're still have a mild degree of inflation. Our CPI is up 0.8% in the last 12 months. The problem is that if you look at the mild downturns in the United States in 1990, 91, and 2000, 2001, the inflation rate dropped about 2.5 percentage points in the U.S. and Europe. So you get any type of mild downturn, you're going to go into deflation. That's just the way it is. Falling inflation is as much of a economic contraction as is weak GDP.
So how do we get out of this? And in fact, I know that the Fed has $4 trillion on its balance sheet. We've had all this QE. We've got tremendous amount of debt. Numbers that, frankly, I've never even thought of. I couldn't even imagine having $17 or $18 trillion of debt when I was in college. How are we going to get out of this situation?
Well, the problem is that public and private debt is about, in the United States, is about 370% of GDP. And the academic studies have shown that when public and private debt rises above 250% to 270%, that it has a deleterious impact on economic growth. And we really are trying to solve an indebtedness problem by taking on more debt. That's been the Japanese solution. And it's been an absolute failure. Now public and private debt in Japan is over 650%. The Europeans have been trying to solve an indebtedness problem by extending debt, taking on more debt, and their public and private debt is about 450%. So there are really no pockets in the world that are not extremely over-indebted. And people forget that debt is an increase in current spending in lieu of a decline in future spending, unless the debt it generates a cash stream to repay principal and interest. But if you're taking on debt to meet daily living needs, or if you're taking on debt to finance interest payments, you're not going to generate an income stream. And so the trying to use debt, more debt, to correct an overborrowed situation has historically produced very bad results. Weak economic growth or stagnant economic growth and falling inflation. And that's what has been characterizing the world for the last several years. And that will continue to be the outlook as long as we do not address the debt problem.
Well, how can we address the debt problem, Dr. Hunt? I mean, because you mentioned Japan, for instance. Japan has been at zero interest rates, I guess, for almost two decades now. It seems like you can get into cycles, almost spirals, that you just kind of stay stuck where you are. I've only got about 30 seconds.
Well, it can only be addressed through fiscal policy. Monetary policy's bag of tricks is empty. There's nothing that the central banks of the world can do other than pace things together, buy a little bit of time. But the fiscal policy options are too difficult politically, so we're basically stuck.
Dr. Hunt, if you'll stay with me, I'd like to ask you a few more questions on this side of the break.
Absolutely. Glad to do it, Mike.
Folks, we're having a great show today. Stay with us. We've got Dr. Lacey Hunt, Executive Vice President of HIMCO. We'll be back in just a few moments. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. Back in a minute.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Dr. Lacey Hunt, who's with us today, he's Executive Vice President of Hoisington Asset Management up in Austin, Texas. Yeah, one of the positions that he held the position of Senior Economist for the Federal Reserve Bank in Dallas. Dr. Hunt, we were talking a little bit during the break about there is a lot of confusion and, in fact, I think a lack of knowledge on the part of the consumer and, frankly, many of those in the investment community about the relationship between the economy and the stock market. A lot of people think, well, stock market's doing so well, the economy must be in great shape. That's not the case, is it?
No, the economy last year was softer than it was in 2013. We lost a lot of momentum as we closed 2014. This economy, to have any get up and go, is got to do it in the big tickets. You're not going to move this economy forward over the counter or in shopping carts. You've got to have strength in housing. You've got to have strength in capital spending and net exports, the big ticket items, and all of those are either flat or declining. And the risk is that they're going to get weaker as the year goes along. It's been my experience, and as you know, I've been in the game for a long time, it's best not to allow the stock market to influence one's thinking about the economy. The stock market is not the economy. It can be heavily influenced by excess liquidity, which we do have in the system currently, but the economic fundamentals are much, much weaker than are indicated by the market.
So has this been a Fed-driven market? I have a chart. I can't remember where the chart came from, but it shows the influx of capital from the Fed, and superimposed on that is the Standard & Poor's 500, and you couldn't find a closer relationship between the two. Has this been a market and where all that Fed money, all that liquidity has been produced by the Fed, has really forced the stock market up or allowed the market to move higher?
I believe that's the case. If you look at the corporate profits compiled by the Commerce Department, the numbers that come through the Internal Revenue Service, and which are adjusted for inventory gains or losses and over or under depreciation, we've had three consecutive year-over-year declines, and that's what happens when the economic growth rate is slowing. I mean, firms can report whatever they want and attach 40 or 50 footnotes, but if you over-report to the IRS, you pay more taxes than you need to. If you under-report, you can go to jail. But the IRS-based numbers are flashing a warning signal right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going in for a pullback. Are we in a bubble? There are questions out there. Are we a bond bubble? You can see an article. We're in a stock bubble. Do you see a bubble in either sector?
No. I see the potentiality in the stock market, but I do not in the bond market. The bond yield is defined by the Fisher equation, which is one of the pillars of macroeconomics, which says the risk-free long rate is equal to the real rate plus expected inflation. In Germany, the 30-year yield is about 1, but they have a 1% decline in inflation. Well, the real return in Germany is 2. And that historically is what investors get over the long term. A bond bubble would be if the real yields started dropping materially below 2%, 1.5%, 1%. And that may happen for a limited period of time, but in an extended period of time, that would be an indication. As long as the inflation rate is falling, investors are advised to hold their positions in the long end of the Treasury market.
All right. So the long end of the Treasury, are you suggesting that people buy like the 30-year or is the 10?
Well, last year when our accounts were up 33%, we carried 19, 20-year duration. That's where we are today because the momentum in inflation is still to the downside. And as I said earlier, the problem is the over-indebtedness. When economies are extremely over-indebted, monetary policy is inoperative. It's very difficult for the money supply to grow, and the velocity of money falls. So, what we have is that the M2 money supply is only growing about 5%. Velocity is trending down at about 3%, which means that nominal GDP this year is only going to grow 2%. In fact, in the fourth quarter of last year, the turnover, the speed at which money was turning over, fell to a six-decade low. That's a direct reflection of the extreme over-indebtedness and the wrong type of debt.
So now I can't let you go without talking about the Federal Reserve. We've got the release of the minutes coming up. There's a lot of conversation now that at this release or there's a meeting in March or sometime coming up, they're going to take the word patient out and to get ready to raise rates either in the June meeting or September. What are your thoughts? Are they going to take the word patient out first to kind of send
us
an
early warning? We're on record that they will not raise rates this year. The economy is too weak. We think it's nonsensical to say that you have to raise rates so that you can lower them. And this is the even stronger point, if the Fed were to raise rates, that would not be adversarial to the long end of the market. It would cause the short yields to go up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if you go back and look at 2004, 2005, when the Fed started raising rates, the long end of the market rallied. If they were to begin tightening monetary policy, the dollar would get stronger. It's already up 30% from 2011. The dollar is effectively at a 12-year high. That's pumping in the disinflationary forces from the rest of the world. So the dollar would get even stronger, which would mean more disinflation, and it would put downward pressure on the commodity prices. So in my view, I don't think they will do it. If they do raise the rates a little bit over the course of the year, and I'm wrong on that point, I don't think the long end of the market will be hurt at all.
Wow. All right, you mentioned commodities, and you're in Texas with us. Any thoughts on oil? This morning, for instance, I had two headlines. Dr. Gary Schilling saying oil was going to $10 to $20 a barrel. Morgan Stanley was saying oil was forming a bottom. Any thoughts on that commodity, sir?
Well, I think that this is my interpretation. I can't give you a price. I'm not a petroleum economist. But I think the oil prices are here because of the weak economic conditions. Oil demand rises proportionally with economic activity. Economic activity has been falling, and that's the main cause. Yes, there was production increases in Texas and the United States, but a lot of the older fields in the world were declining. And the main weakness is lack of demand, and that's a reflection of the global economic situation. I will say this. I do not view the decline in oil prices as a plus for the U.S. economy. And here's the reason why. Last year, we consumed about 19 million barrels a day of petroleum product, and we had net imports of about 5 million barrels. So the import content was 5/19 of every barrel of petroleum, which means it's about 27%. So we know that people are spending less on petroleum. Now, they have two options. One, they can save it. So far, that's the indicator. But if they spend it and, say, shift it to clothing has an import content of almost 90%. This is not the old days where we mainly imported our petroleum. In addition, 35% of the gains in capital spending and research and development came in the petroleum sector. There was never a renaissance of American manufacturing. There was a renaissance of American petroleum, and that was it.
Wow. That's really interesting. Dr. Hunt, you've been fantastic. Thank you. You've given us so much to think about. We very much appreciate you coming on with us today. Have a great day, sir.
Thank you for the year.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.